listening to this week's LaFever CFC podcast. Connect with us via our website, lafevercfc.com, or our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/lafevercfc. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
Wanting to just share a few thoughts today on divine disruption, and we'll jump to that in a minute, but in the business world, there's this idea of a market disruption. I'm not a business person, so I'm going to not do this full justice, but the idea, if you're starting a business or you've got a business, you're looking for that idea to disrupt a market, a game-changing activity that allows you to disrupt the way things normally operate and capture the market and change the way people do things so that your business succeeds and you get on with getting a profit, capturing a market, wiping out the competitors, but it's a game changer. Some of you are too old to remember what a personal computer probably is. You might have a bit of an idea of that, but before the personal computer was the mainframe computer. And some of us sort of have some memories around that sort of space, so I'm showing a bit of my age. So a computer was a $2 million exercise. Big business had computers, but no one thought about having a computer at home until someone came up with the idea of a personal computer that went in your home. Anyone ever have a Commodore 64? That was the first computer we had in our home. Green screen, digital, like, yeah, it wasn't high tech. And then we upgraded to a 128. And that's kilobytes, isn't it? It's not even megabytes. Yeah, that's it. So I had one of those. And then, so things evolved, and now we carry around in our pockets, and all of you, even probably the kids that are here, have a phone in your pocket that has a huge amount of capacity far beyond what those first personal computers had. But they were a game changer. They disrupted a market, they changed things, but as soon as the personal computers came in, they went everywhere. It was just, I think this week or last week, Microsoft celebrated some sort of anniversary of when they got into the market as well. Transistor radios were another thing that transformed and disrupted a market. Some of you are too old to know what a radio is probably. But there used to be music. To listen to music, you had a big sound system at home and you would sit there and listen to music at home. And then the radios came in where you're able to actually make it mobile, to take a radio with you. Who had a boombox? There we go. You're all showing your age with your D-sized batteries, six of them or eight of them, jammed in the back of a cassette player, and then you'd carry it around on your shoulder and pump your music. That made music mobile. Amazing. And then we went to the Sony Walkman. Yeah, had some of those. Even the Discman, where you actually got a disc and took that around when you were able to play with music, and then MP3 players came in. And then Apple iPod was a changer as well, and now we've got the smartphones where it's just everything's with us. Our camera has disrupted the market for digital cameras. We carry a camera, a phone, a computer around with us in our pockets. But they were game changers. They disrupted markets. Here's a few other things that have disrupted markets more recently. Airbnb, that you just jump online, book a hotel in someone else's house, or book a room in someone else's house, and you can travel and go and stay in their place. Changed the way that people traveled in tourism. Tesla is changing the way we think about cars. The electronic car, and it's just smashed that market, and it is changing the world. Uber Eats, Friday night, Sandra said, I'm too tired. So we're having Uber Eats. So we just jumped on the phone, ordered the food. Unfortunately, it was 45 minutes later it came. We're hoping for it a little bit quicker than that. So I was hungry by the time it finally arrived, but I didn't want to pay the extra money to get the express delivery because I'm stingy. so I waited the extra 15, 20 minutes for it to arrive. But I could have jumped in the car and gone to Semaphore Road and bought it myself. Alyssa was out driving. I should have just rung her and told her to go pick it up. But the Red Rock Noodle Bar was very nice. Char Kway Teow, it was delicious. Amazon is another game changer, that buying stuff online. It's just sit at home, research what you want, press that. A couple of days later, it ends up in a box on your doorstep. markets change, all these things. Netflix is another one, streaming. Tracy used to work in a Blockbusters, is that right? Video store? Yeah, there we go. Got the wrong name, but the basic same idea where you would actually go to a store, pick the video that you wanted to watch and go home and hope that they've actually rewound it so you didn't have to rewind it yourself and then sit down and watch that. But all these things were game changers. They disrupted a market. I'm going to talk about Jesus being a disruptor. That Jesus came, the intent of Jesus Christ coming was coming to disrupt, to a game changer for humanity. Humanity was going along in its own way, doing its own thing, but Jesus Christ came to disrupt. And everyone who had an encounter with him were disrupted by him. Some of those disruptions became encounters or interruptions that became lifetime disruptions. But there's many who encountered him or had an interaction with him. More you would describe it, it was an interruption or a moment that didn't translate to disruption. Didn't become a game-changing event. There's 10 lepers that met with Jesus and they were calling out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us." 10 of them desperately wanted a miracle. Jesus said, "Yep, go present yourself to the priest. And you'll be healed." And as they went, there was this miracle that took place in them to present themselves healed. One came back because he got this revelation, I reckon, that actually, Jesus, you've sent us to the priest, but Jesus, you are the true high priest. I'm coming back to you, the true high priest. And he ended up at the feet of Jesus, and Jesus said, "Your faith has made you well," or made you whole. That one, there was 10 that could have had a complete disruption to their life. They got a miracle, yes, but they missed this complete disruption, a game-changing opportunity that was before them that they missed. In Acts chapter 3, there's a story of a crippled, and this is an interaction where Peter and John are there, and this crippled is placed at the gates every day to beg, and the scriptures tell us that every day he was placed there. And then it says one day something changed. One day a disruption happened to this man's life that changed his life forever. And it was a disruptive moment in the sense that Peter and John are there and they look at him and say, "Silver and gold we don't have, but what we do have in the name of Jesus, get up and walk." And they grab him by the hands and he stands up and his legs are straightened out. He's completely healed. And it says that he went on from there leaping and jumping and praising God. Just say that was a Monday. On Tuesday, if he's back there sitting begging again, you'd be really confused by that, wouldn't you? Because the interaction with Jesus, through his disciples and the healing that took place, disrupted everything for this man. And he spent the rest of his life jumping and praising and worshiping God because of this one moment, this one day that changed then his everydays. Prior to that encounter with Jesus, every day of his life had been the same. It was begging for money at the gates. But this interaction, this disruption changed what he did for the rest of his life. And he ended up in the temple courts explaining what took place and who did this and all these sorts of things that happened. But if he went back to just doing what he was doing day after day after day, pre the encounter, you'd think, well, that hasn't disrupted, that hasn't changed. But how easy is it for us at times to allow the encounter with God to not go deep, to miss those opportunities, to say, "Yeah, I've had an encounter, I've had a moment, I've been to a conference, or I had a touch from God," and we don't let it become deep and disruptive. I'm guilty of that. And how do we make these moments go deep? How do we allow these moments to go deep? And just as I've been reflecting, obviously it's the things of, you know, spending time in the Word, spending time in a community of people that stir that passion and encourage that dream that's within us, people who feed that passion and the desires that God's placed within us. But maybe for you, there's a dream that, you know, "God, you disturbed me many years ago. There was a moment back then, years ago, where you touched me and you spoke to me, but that encounter, that moment hasn't gone deep. I encourage you, go back to that moment and remind yourself of it and say, Lord, I want that to go deeper with me. This is more than, I'm talking more than just your personal salvation and your time with Christ and your salvation, but for us to say, oh God, you spoke this promise. You spoke this promise to me. You gave me this dream. You put this idea in my heart. And now I'm, you know, it's 10 years on, or it's 5 years on, or it's a time on, and it hasn't happened. I want it to go deep, Lord. I want that encounter to go deeper in my life. If you're here and you don't know Jesus, I would say this to you. Jesus, the whole purpose of Jesus Christ coming was to disrupt humanity. We were going on in a Christless eternity. We were going on in a space where we were separated between God. There was hostility between God and man. And he came in. Jesus came with the purpose from coming from heaven to earth with the one sole purpose is to break down the hostility between God and man and open up heaven's door so that we could freely step into that space. To disrupt humanity in our selfishness, our brokenness, our rebelliousness and say, give me your attention. In John's gospel, it says, well, if Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you know what I'm like, you know what God's like. Those pretty bold statements. But he came to show us what God was like and to bring change to our thinking and our mindset of how we relate to God. That the Old Testament systems of rules and regulations and ways of functioning are gone. So that's no more. I want to have personal relationship with individuals, one-on-one, where Jesus is our priest, speaking directly to humanity. Not through priests, but through the one great high priest, Jesus Christ, speaking to each one of us individually. And we have that freedom to boldly go into his presence. I want that disruption in my life. And there were many people who had encounters with Jesus in John's gospel. Just look at this verse for a little bit in John chapter 12. And many times through John's whole gospel was written with the purpose of getting people to a place of belief. And I found John a little bit confusing in chapter 12. You can go and look at this later. But in verse 37 of this same passage, he says, not many people believed in Jesus. And then 5 verses later, he's talking about all these people who did believe in Jesus. So it's told us not many believed, the crowds and different things, but then there were some that were believed. And there's this Pharisees who, the Pharisaical leaders were doing everything they could to stop the disruption of Jesus Christ that was having to them. In fact, earlier back in John's gospel where Jesus triumphantly enters in on a donkey, they looked at Jesus coming in on the donkey and all these people singing Hosanna and shouting his name. We talked about that on Palm Sunday. They said, look, all the world's turning to him. He's disrupting us. We have to kill him. We have to get rid of him. So they were there trying to get rid of Jesus. But some of the Pharisees believed. Let's look at this. Yet at the same time, many, even among the leading leaders believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they would not openly acknowledge their faith for fear they would not be, they would be put out of the synagogue. For the Lord, for they loved human praises more than the praise of God. And just as I've been reflecting, I'm saying, Lord, I want you to that disruption of you and my encounters with you to be completely disruptive. Whether it's on a day-to-day, my morning devotion, or whether it's things that you've spoken into my life, over my life, and for us as a church, as you speak to us, I want it to be disruptive and for it to go deep. But many times I'm like these Pharisees. If you're honest, you're probably the same. But many times I go, but if I do that, that has consequences for me. What will people think of me? What will others say about me? What will these others do? And what hinders me from actually allowing the disruption of Jesus Christ into my life to be complete and permanent and eternal and lasting and going deep within me? I'm going to look at two of them. One of them is that it really is the longing to belong, that need to belong. And these guys back in John's gospel, they thought, well, we need to belong to the temple, because if we're kicked out of there, we've got problems. And we don't necessarily understand it in our culture, but in their culture, the society, family, relationships, everything revolved around the synagogue. And if you're out of there, you're out of all of those things. So they weren't willing to take that step to stand up for Jesus. They wanted kept it hidden, and they came close, they had an encounter, they believed, but it didn't go deep. As I looked at this and reflected, I thought, well, Lord, sometimes I'm like that. Sometimes my heart is driven by my need for acceptance. Sometimes my heart's driven by my fear of rejection. Sometimes the decisions that I make as a leader or as a pastor or as a friend or a dad, I make decisions about what actually is going to be good for my relationship with that person and not what is, and it's driven from something broken inside of me rather than from a place of actually going, well, I know what's right in this situation. I know what the Lord is saying here, and I make choices like that at times. I think if we're all honest as human beings, it's part of our broken condition that we need to belong. We need acceptance. And if we don't deal with this orphan sort of heart that can come our way, that this sense of our need for acceptance and looking for other places to get it, where we honour the praise of people rather than of God, then we can all end up in that place. So to make me feel okay, I looked at a whole heap of people in the scriptures who had the same issues at different moments in time. So maybe you can relate to these guys. Gideon, an angel of the Lord came to him and said, mighty warrior, mighty man of valor. And he goes, that's not me. You've got the wrong man. I'm insecure. I'm the least. I'm the weakest. I'm nothing. So he's talking back to God and telling God, well, all of his humanity, all of his weaknesses, all the things that are not right of him. That's his first response. Thankfully, the Lord doesn't say, yeah, you're right, I'll go find somebody else. The Lord says, no, you're it. And he speaks into it. But his first response was to look at his own issues in life, his own humanity. Look at the devil who was cast out of heaven, the choir leader of heaven and over all the angels in the throne room leading the praise and worship. He's in that great place. But it wasn't enough. He needed more. There was something in him that needed extra, needed more fame, needed more recognition, needed more acceptance. And out of that, he was cast out of heaven. You look at Joseph's brothers. Joseph's brothers, they took Joseph. If you don't know the story, they took Joseph. They wanted to kill him, so they didn't do that. They beat him up, stuck him in a hole, and then sold him into slavery, but took the coat, this special coat that his dad had given him, and they put animal's blood on it, and they went to the father and said, look, he got eaten by animals. But they did all of this because of the weakness of the father that created problems in the son, because the father showed favoritism to one. I tell you, as a parent, if you show favoritism to one of your kids, you're always going to have trouble. You might have one that you connect with because you've got common interests or there's similarities or there's things there, but you cannot show favoritism. Doesn't mean you have to parent them all the same. If you parent all your kids the same, you're going to be in trouble because they're all different. Different personalities respond in different ways. My boy James, if I just looked at him, and he knew he'd been doing it, if I looked at him with a cross face, he would break. Benjamin, if he'd done the wrong thing and you told him he was going to get a smack, I know you're probably not allowed to smack people in Australia. We're in Papua New Guinea, so it was okay. He would turn around and say, okay, smack me. Go for it. So discipline for him required something very different. But Joseph's brothers were driven by a brokenness in them to get acceptance from the father, and it caused them to do something really evil. Moses, when God appeared to him in a bush, Moses, God appears in this burning bush, says, I'm going to use you to lead my people out of Egypt. And he goes, no, I can't speak properly. They won't listen to me. I can't talk. No, you've got the wrong man, God. God says, no, you're the one. I'll send you your brother Aaron to go with you. Which was a great choice. Aaron could speak, but Aaron, he liked the praises of people. They'd come through out of Egypt, through the Red Sea, provisions of God, miracles taking place. They're at the Mount Sinai. Moses goes up to the mountain and he's getting the Ten Commandments. Hearing from God, face to face with God for 40 days. And Aaron's down the bottom. All he has to do is look after this group of people. And they come to him and say, Aaron, we need something to worship. He says, we need a cow. We need something. We need an idol to worship and to please the people. He knew it was wrong. He knew what God had spoken to them. He knew what they needed. But out of fear of what the people would say, he, no, I'm not going to. He gives them. Yep, okay, let's do it. And then Moses comes down. King Saul, another one. He lost his kingdom because he gave the people what they wanted, not what he knew was right in God's eyes. Elijah called down fire from heaven. Seen this mighty miracle, had this amazing encounter with God. Like he prayed and fire had come down from heaven and consumed these sacrifices and the water and the rocks and everything. Amazing miracle, great power, had this great encounter with God. Phenomenal. I'd love to see that. Pray and fire comes down from heaven. How awesome would that be? Within days, he gets a death threat and he's in a hole. He says, it flipped him. The sense of rejection, the sense of what's going on here, the brokenness in him unravels him. Then you've got the disciples. They're with Jesus, handpicked by Jesus. And they're having an argument one day out of who of them was the most acceptable to sit at his left and at his right. Who's the most important among them? Who's the most significant? Who has the most value? So they're just letting their brokenness, their humanity, their need for importance and recognition and acceptance. And they're having this argument right there. These are the 12 that Jesus picked. These are the 12 that later went and changed the world and led the church and amazing things took place for them. But in this moment, they could have disrupted it all. They could have let it all unravel. But Jesus then speaks to them amazingly and says, you know, you want to be great in the kingdom? You've got to deal with this. You've got to become a servant. You've got to take a servant position. It's interesting, Jim Collins, who wrote a book called Good to Great, talking about, and it's a secular book, a business book. And in that book, he actually talks about the great leaders of great organizations. And he couldn't believe that this was actually going to the result of all his research, but he discovered that out of all these great performing companies, the top CEOs, the top men and women leading these organizations, one of the key attributes of them was actually humility. And he said, oh, well, surely that's not it. And he did the research, looked at the stats again. But that's really what Christ is saying for us, that we need to be people with humility, which goes against our need to feel important, to be recognized, to be up front, to have everyone know our name. Because we're driven by an orphan spirit so often that causes us to need more recognition, need more from him. So let me ask you in this, how are you doing at being a child of God? And I don't like the word doing in that question, but I couldn't think of another word that would actually capture what I'm trying to say. If you have one, let me know. How are you doing as being a child? Because it's not about it's not the doing activity, performing to keep the dad happy or the father happy, but it's about the doing of actually resting in that place, the knowing that you're a child of God. Romans 8, verse 14 and 15 says this, for all who are led by the Spirit of Christ are children of God. So you have not received a spirit that makes you fearful slaves. Instead, you received God's Spirit when he adopted you as his own child. Now we call him Abba Father. Call him Abba Father. What an amazing thought. That if we're going to see and have that complete disruption, learning to rest in him as a child of God, learning to that encounter, that in moments with God, that we're actually resting in that place, that Jesus, I am yours. I belong to you. That he wants to fix that brokenness in us. Because I know at various points, it's there for each one of us. Manifests itself at different times in different ways. But I've got the Spirit of God that lives in me. You've got the Spirit of God that lives in you that calls out from within you that you are a child of God. calls out to your Father in heaven, say, "I am, you are my Father in heaven." That Spirit dwells within us. But so often, we're not listening to that voice, that Spirit that's within us, and we're looking to ways to meet our own need, to meet our own humanity, meet our own brokenness. And Jesus wants to deal with that brokenness that is within us. Do you see yourself? What name do you respond to? Do you respond to the name of being a child of God? Or do you respond to, you're an orphan, you're a nobody, you're not acceptable? But so often we go to that place. But Jesus came to disrupt. Jesus came to bring us into that total place of being his child. And when we take hold of that, man, he gets hold of us. Another thing, I think letting that humanity, our brokenness, be our driver is so often what causes us difficulties in allowing the disruption to go deep and long in our life. Another thing, just quickly, is that sometimes there's a gap, living in the gap from the in-between. David got anointed. He was just a young boy. He was anointed. And there was a gap. He was anointed to be king by Samuel. And there was a gap between then and when he actually became king. Anyone know how long that was? Come on, Lockie, you should know that. This is the sort of information Lockie retains. Anyone else? Paul would know the answer to this as well. He retains all that sort of information. Anyone got any idea? Sorry? Excellent. 15? There we go. Well, maybe it's common knowledge, is it? 15 years before between when he was anointed, that's what most commentators reckon, between when he was anointed and when he became king of most of Israel, but not all of it. It was another 7 years before he became the king over all of Israel. So 20 plus years, there was this gap, this time in between. We want the disruption to go deep, and the words that the Lord speaks to us and following him, we need to take those times to be able to encourage ourselves in the Lord like David did. He learned a lot in that time, in the in-between time, living in that space. In 1 Samuel 30 verse 6, it says, David was now in great danger because all the men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they were beginning to talk of stoning him. But David found strength in the Lord his God. Found strength in the Lord his God. Do you find yourself in a position of encouragement? Because location matters. Last year I was talking to Rod about, he's talking about how he went out for a great Indian meal. I said, where? Tell me where. Because if you had gone out for a great meal, you want to know the location of it. So it was Raj on Taj at the port. Lovely Indian food. Been there many times since, but took that recommendation and went there, because as soon as you know, you've got great food, you want to know the location. Location matters. And in this, looking at this, where do we get our encouragement from? Well, location matters. I'm just getting through this bit quick because I want to bring us to a close. But ask yourself these three questions. If you're facing discouragement, disappointment, or finding time, there's a long time before there where God spoke to me and where I'm getting to and where you want me to be, Lord. Ask yourself these things. Struggling even with your sense of God's presence in your life and walking with him. Location matters when it comes to encouragement. Where have your thoughts been? Ask yourself that question. I know when I'm discouraged and I'm not letting the encounter go deep or that sense of God's presence go deep, where have my thoughts been? What have I been thinking about? What have I been filling my mind with? Another question. Where have my eyes and ears been? What am I looking at? What am I listening to? What am I filling my mind with? Hebrews 12 verse 2 tells us, fix our eyes on Jesus Christ, the author and perfecter of our faith. But fix our eyes on him, the pioneer of our faith. Fix your eyes on him. Romans 10 verse 17 talks about faith comes through hearing. But you know our words? What we listen to, music, the things that we're watching, they have an impact on our soul and can lead us to a place of discouragement. So encourage yourself. What are you listening to? What are you looking at? So you're finding yourself being disappointed, discouraged, getting down. Good question to ask yourself. Where have your hands and your feet been? Where are you going? Where is your location? Find one really good way to actually build that encouragement is when I actually start serving others. I find my hands and my feet and I serve others. It puts me in a position where I actually stay very encouraged in the Lord. Location matters. I say that, but David found that space. It said when he was having a really disastrous day, really disastrous time, he'd been anointed king, wasn't king yet, going through trouble. What did he do? He went to a location. He found encouragement in the Lord. It says the Lord, his God. The Lord, his God. It was personal. Encourage us to stay in that place. Jesus Christ came to disrupt. He's the great disruptor. I'm praying that for me, for us, for each one of us, that those encounters, those moments with God on the day-to-day, weekly basis, whether they're coming, that they would be times where we allow that disruption to go permanent. And two things that disrupt that will stop us from letting it go deep. You know, our own sense of I'm not worthy, I'm not a child of God, I'm not sitting in that place. Where I'm driven by my own need to find acceptance outside of being his child. And then the other one is, when discouragement hits, and there's some three questions to ask yourself. If those discouragement times are coming, ask yourself those questions. Say, is there something I can adjust so I can stay in that place of encouragement?